Today on Lasting Hope with Pastor Greg Spires.
Our salvation is all about God. Our salvation is for us. It is about Him. God doesn't save us to get us out of trouble. He saves us because He's trustworthy. The subject matter of our salvation is God. We just happen to be the recipients of it.
Welcome to Lasting Hope with Bible teacher Greg Spires, pastor of FBC in Medford, Oregon. The patriarchs of the nation of Israel knew God as a promise-making God, but they never had the opportunity to see the Abrahamic covenant to fruition firsthand. However, one important promise Moses did see fulfilled was the freeing of the Israelites from bondage in Egypt. And in a message titled, Why Would God Save Us? From our continuing study series through the book of Exodus, Pastor Greg reveals the trustworthiness and the nature of God to fulfill our every need.
Exodus chapter 6, verses 2 through 8. God spoke to Moses and said to him, I am the Lord. I appeared to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob as God Almighty. But by my name, the Lord, I did not make myself known to them. I also established my covenant with them to give them the land of Canaan, the land in which they lived as sojourners. Moreover, I have heard the groaning of the people of Israel, whom the Egyptians hold as slaves, and I have remembered my covenant. Say, therefore, to the people of Israel, I am the Lord, and I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians, and I will deliver you from slavery to them, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great acts of judgment. I will take you to be my people, and I will be your God, and you shall know that I am the Lord your God, who has brought you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. I will bring you into the land that I swore to give to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. I will give it to you for a possession. I am the Lord. I don't know if you've been to Iraq recently. Maybe not, right? Well, they have a problem in Iraq. A lot of people are getting kidnapped. They have a kidnapping problem in Iraq because what it is, there's a lot of these groups, evil intent, looking for ways to stir things up, cause problems. What they do is kidnap foreigners as a way of destabilizing things, spreading fear, these sorts of things. And I mean, sometimes foreigners are rescued and other times they're not. I mean, let's be honest, most of the time they're not. And the problem is kind of twofold. Is number one, it's kind of a different situation than we're used to. There's a lot of tribal factions, these sorts of things. The other thing is Iraq doesn't necessarily have the resources to investigate all these kidnappings. And now, but the problem that they're facing, though, is it's sort of a PR problem. People aren't planning their next vacation to Baghdad. The issue being, I mean, there's a lot of places over there you might want to see, world historical sites. And there are reasons to travel to that part of the country. So what they do is when there is a rescue, they make a big deal out of it. In a month or two, maybe the last 6 months, a couple of Filipino foreigner travelers were rescued, and of course the government of Iraq made sort of a big deal out of it. Look, we rescued 2 of the 1,000 people that got kidnapped this year. So the question is, why did Iraq rescue these 2 foreign Filipino women? Because they needed to for a PR move. Good foreign relations, keep things copacetic with the other countries. Well, the question you might ask yourself as we look at the people of Israel in Egypt and we wonder, here comes God who's going to rescue them out of Egypt. You should ask this question. I think it's a fair question. Why would God save Israel? And connected to that, why would God save us? What motivates him? Is it a PR move? Is he taking some hits from the PR standpoint? And does he have nothing better to do? There's nothing on Netflix. So he thought, well, okay, I'll save Israel. Why would God save us? Look at Exodus 5, 22. In 23, Moses, of course, had confronted Pharaoh and said, let my people go. And Pharaoh said, I don't think so. I'm going to make your work really hard, and I think I'm going to kill all the Hebrews. People of Israel sort of freaked out. Moses sort of freaks out, and he prays this prayer. Moses turned to the Lord and said, O Lord, this is Exodus 5:22, why have you done evil to this people? Why did you ever send me? For since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he's done evil to this people. You have not delivered your people at all. Why, O Lord, did you send me to save the people? You're not doing the job. Something we need to understand as we try to answer this question, why would God save us, is this. And we're going to use this sort of as a way of understanding what God is up to. It turns out there was more at stake in Egypt than whether or not Moses had a good day. It turns out whether or not things went well for Moses was not the priority God had in saving Israel. Did you notice that? Since God sends Moses to the time they get to the promised land, how many good days does Moses have? If he had them, they're not written down. It turns out there is more at stake here than whether or not Moses is having a good time, whether or not Israel is having a good time, whether or not they're hashtag blessed. Some of you, what's a hashtag? Google it. If you don't know what Google is, I can't help you. Why would God save us? We're going to start in verse 14 and work backwards today. Why would God save us if it wasn't just to give us a good day, to bless us? Why would God save us? We need to understand this. First of all, why would God save us? Look at verse 14. It's a genealogy. I'm not going to read it all. You're welcome. You can read it on your own. Why would God save us? First thing, he wants us to see his trustworthiness. Why would God save us? First of all, he wants us to see his trustworthiness. Now think about it this way. There's a group of demonstration aviators called the Blue Angels. The Blue Angels are aviators for the Navy, and the pilots of the Blue Angel aircraft are both naval pilots as well as marine pilots, and they're selected to demonstrate the capabilities of the aircraft as well as the pilots to the public. Who's seen the Blue Angels? Okay, you've seen them. You know what I'm talking about then. The mission of the Blue Angels as an aircraft wing is to demonstrate to the public the professionalism and capability of naval aviation. They do a pretty good job of that. If you go to a Blue Angel outfit demonstration, you go, those guys can fly. I bet you if they had to fight somebody else in an airplane, they would win. The Blue Angels demonstrate their capability that we might have some trust in their ability to defend America's interests. So God comes to Moses and says, I want to save you. And one of the reasons is I want to demonstrate my trustworthiness. Look at verse 14. These are the heads of their father's houses. Here's how Israel was organized. God called Abraham. Who knows Father Abraham? Many sons? Okay, good. Had Abraham. Abraham had a promise given him to by God that he would have lots of kids and he would have a land. God then continues that promise from Abraham to Abraham's son, who was named Isaac. Good. So Abraham had a promise made to him, and that promise carried on to Isaac. So Isaac was the son of the covenant. Isaac then had a son, and his son's name was Jacob. And Jacob was the son of the covenant. Now, Abraham, Isaac, and Isaac had other sons, but they weren't sons of the covenant. The son of the promise is Jacob, and Jacob had a new name, which was Israel. So all of the sons of Israel are the sons and daughters of the promise of God. I will give you a land and you will be my people. And so now in this genealogy, he's going to tell us about the sons of Israel, three of them. And that sons of Israel, there was actually 12, they were the tribes of Israel. And the firstborn son was Reuben. Look in verse 14. These are the heads of the houses. Reuben. So you have Reuben, firstborn son. All he says is, yeah, he had a couple of kids. Then verse 15, the sons of Simeon. That was the secondborn son of Israel. Another tribe of Israel, Simeon. He had a couple of sons. Good for him. Then verse 16, these are the names of the sons of Levi. And this is where we stop. The other nine sons of Israel are not mentioned in this genealogy. All he does is then describe many of the sons of Levi, culminating with Moses and Aaron. So Moses and Aaron are among the sons of what? Levi. And he's making a point. Moses and Aaron, through which God will bring his law and the tabernacle system and the worship of God, are Levites. And the Levites are going to be set aside for the priesthood. Look at verse 26. These are the Aaron and the Moses to whom the Lord said, bring out the people of Israel from the land of Egypt by their host. Here's what God is saying through this little genealogy. I made a promise to Abraham, I made a promise to Isaac, I made a promise to Jacob, and I mean to keep it. I am a covenant-making God, and I am a promise-keeping God, and I want to save you as a means of showing you I do not forget my promises, and I always keep my promises. Moses and Aaron going to Egypt to call out the people of Israel is to remind Moses and Aaron and the people of Israel, God keeps his promises. Every promise God has ever made, God has kept. A promise made by God is as good as done. Moses and Aaron matter. Why? Because they're handsome devils? Because they're well-spoken? Influential? Lots of money? Friends in the right places? No, none of these things matter. Frankly, they had none of these things. Moses and Aaron matter because the covenant matters, and the covenant matters because of the covenant maker. Who made it? God did. How often does he keep his promises? Always. God is the covenant making God. God is the covenant keeping God. What if they disobey? What will happen to the covenant then? Remember the covenant. Okay, now we're off script. Just give me a minute. Are you ready? Remember when he made the promise to Abraham in Genesis? What did he do? He said, Abraham, I'm going to make you a promise, give you lots of kids, give you lots of real estate. It's going to be off the chain. Something like that. Go get some animals, cut them in half, and lay them out. And this was a normal way of making a signing a treaty. And we've talked about this before, but as a reminder, what would you do if you were a big, strong king, and yet a little weak king, and you were going to make a treaty with him? What would you do? You'd make the little scrawny guy pass through the animals. After he passes through the midst of the animals, what do you say? If you break my treaty, I will do to you as has been done to these animals. That's gross. Say, I don't want to be cut in half, much less I don't want to be cut in half long ways. That seems much harder. But what happened in the Abrahamic covenant? What happened? Who passed through the animals? God did. God says, may it be done to me if you do not keep my treaty. God is going to keep his promises, and it is not dependent on Israel doing a good job with it. He is a trustworthy God. Moses and Aaron matter to Israel. Moses and Aaron matter to Egypt, not because they're Moses and Aaron, but because they are of the tribe of Levi, who was of the son of Israel, who was the son of Isaac, who was of the son of Abraham, who received a promise from God that will be kept. Covenant matters because God keeps his promises. Listen, the Bible is telling us about God's intervention in human history to make a way for sinners to have a relationship with God. He's been doing this since the beginning, since Adam and Eve. He says, I'm going to tell you about my mission to save sinners through human history, and that history of God intervening to provide salvation to us only matters because God can be trusted. His promise to save sinners through the people of Israel, his promise to save sinners through the Messiah, is only useful because God is trustworthy. I would even say this, because God is trustworthy, the covenant matters. Because God is trustworthy, redemption is all that matters. Since God is trustworthy, his promises are certain, and since God is trustworthy, his promises are the only thing that matter. Let me put it this way, and then I'll move on to the next point. When we understand that God keeps his promises, and his promises are all about drawing us out of slavery to sin into himself, our only response ought to be, by faith, how do I get in on it? And having gotten in on it by faith, how do I fit into the story God is telling about redemption? Since the only thing that matters is redemption, because God is a promise-keeping God, how do I get in on it? What's the answer? Faith. What about faith and works? No. Heresy. Moving on. It's just faith. I trust him. And he's telling us he's trustworthy. I trust him. Good. I get in on it. Then I ask this question. Well, now that I'm in on it, how do I fit into this grand history he's telling about saving sinners? That's the way we ask these questions. But this is how we normally ask these questions. By we, I mean all of us, including myself. We say this. God keeps his promises. Oh, really? What's in it for me? We don't ask the question, how do I fit into God's grand plan to tell the world he saved people? What do we say? How does God fit into my life? Got a lot of things going on, and I've got the contours of my life. I think God might kind of fit into some of the nooks and crannies. kind of make me feel a little bit empty to being a little bit full. That sounds like a sweet deal. And God says, no, 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 that's not how this works. You're going to fit into me. I'm not trying to fit into you. Moses and Israel are going to learn this over time, and we're going to get into it more detail over the next weeks we're in Exodus. But we find this out. God doesn't save us to get us out of trouble. He saves us because he's trustworthy. Maybe another way of saying it, and an author has put it better than I can, our salvation is all about God. Our salvation is for us. It is about him. The subject matter of our salvation is God. We just happen to be the recipients of it. Why would God save us? What's the first one? He wants us to see he is trustworthy. All right, let's keep going backwards. Back to verse 9. Back to verse 9 of Exodus chapter 6. God says this to Moses in verse 8, I'm going to bring you out of the land. I'm going to give you a possession. And Moses spoke to the people of Israel, and they didn't listen to Moses because of their broken spirit and their harsh slavery. There's an explorer. He's British. I don't know if I've mentioned him before, but maybe you've heard of him. His name is Benedict Allen. And he's kind of an interesting explorer. He likes to go into these very remote places with no safety net, like no satellite phone, no way. It's just go in and see if you live. And what he was doing here recently, I think it's been in 2018, he went down to Papua New Guinea, and what he wanted to do was make contact with this very remote group of people. Really, it had very little to no contact with modern humans. So he went in like he normally does, no safety net, no cell phone, no satellite phone, just the backpack on his back, and he's going to go in and try and meet these people and see what happens. And when it comes time for him to come out, he doesn't show up. Like for a long period of time, I don't know how long, but at least several days, weeks, maybe even months, he doesn't show up at the extraction point. So they don't know what happened to this guy. Finally, one of the organizers of the expedition rented a helicopter, and they flew in, and they looked for him, and they finally found him in this one spot. I don't know how to find a guy in Papua New Guinea. And so he got in the helicopter, and they were interviewing him later and said, well, what happened? What happened? He said, everything went wrong. There was this rope bridge that went across this ravine I was counting on using, and it was gone. It wasn't there. I don't know where it went. So I had to reroute to try and get around this ravine, and then my mosquito net fell apart, and so it got malaria. So I went to take my anti-malarial medicines, and they were all wet. They were ruined. So I got malaria, hiking through Papua New Guinea with malaria, and then the way I'm trying to get to this tribe is blocked off because there's these two other factions and they're at war. And I'm trying to avoid the war. Anyway, then the helicopter shows up and here I am. And he said, well, aren't you glad to get rescued? He goes, whoa, simmer down. I was not lost. I knew where I was the whole time. I didn't ask for this helicopter. I was fine. I only got on the helicopter because I knew my buddy had gotten it at great expense. But if I had my way, I'd still be out there walking around. I think you'd be dead if you'd be walking around, somebody would be carrying you. He couldn't get out. He had malaria. He was lost. And he basically says when he's riding the helicopter, I didn't ask for this. Why would God save us? Verses 9 through 13. He wants us to see our need. He wants us to see our need. The people of Israel cannot hear the good news that God is redeeming them because of that which they need redeeming from. They had a broken spirit because of their harsh slavery. They couldn't see the forest for the trees. They needed saving from their slavery, but their slavery was making it impossible for them to see. They needed saving. A video came out recently about a disoriented man in a burning car. Maybe you've seen it. What happens, he fell asleep in the car with it running, and while it was running, his foot was slipped on the accelerator. It was in park. So the engine revved up real high and then overheated and caught on fire. So then the police show up because people call the police and they're trying to convince him to come out of the car, but he won't come out of the car because he just woke up. You know how that is when you just wake up. Oh, come on, I got to get woke up. But also some of the smoke and the oxygen, he didn't know what was going on. He said, you need to get out of the car. Finally, he had to break the windows, break into the car and drag the guy out. He didn't understand what his need was. He was blind to it because of the fire and the smoke. Just like Israel here doesn't see their need. They need rescuing from slavery, but because of the situation they're in, they don't know what they need. Moses here is seeing nothing but failure. He's gone to Pharaoh and been rejected. He's gone to Israel and been rejected. And he sees nothing but failure, nothing but inadequacy, nothing but more trouble on the horizon. And what we discover about God is God sees absolute success in what's happening. Because God understood what Israel needed before they could experience his redemption, they needed to not only know they needed deliverance, they needed to feel it. And look at how they're described. A broken spirit under their harsh slavery. God knows they need to truly plumb the depths of how difficult a situation they're in before they're going to be ready to respond to his rescue. He wants us to see our need. Why is this so important? Later on in the wilderness, the people of Israel are going to run into hard times again. And this is what they're going to say to Moses. They're going to say, Moses, why did you take us out of Egypt, that land flowing with milk and honey? Why is that an important phrase? Because God, in his covenant, told his people, I will take you and to a land that is flowing with milk and honey. So what are they saying? The trouble we're experiencing right now tells us it would be better to be under slavery than to be with God. God's plan is worse than the slavery we were under. God knew this would happen, so he understands what he's doing here, everything possible to help the people of Israel understand exactly what's going on. They need deliverance from slavery, and until they feel it at the core of their being, they are never going to understand what they need. Look what God commands Moses to do in verse 11 of Exodus 6. Go in, tell Pharaoh, king of Israel, to let the people of Israel go out of his land. What's Moses' job? Go and tell. Is his job to convince Pharaoh? No. Is his job to put the pitch on him? Come up with the key selling points? No. Threaten him? His job is to go and tell. What was his job with the people of Israel? Go and tell. Moses' job is to go and tell. It's God's job to redeem, God's job to bring out, God's job to deliver. Moses' job is to go and tell the truth. And here's something we need to understand about the gospel. The gospel always tells the truth. Why would God save us? Because he wants us to see our need. And the good news of the gospel is you have need. When I was in high school, I got pneumonia. So I went to the doctor. He said, you take these antibiotics, you're going to feel better. Turns out I did. I was thankful for that. He had to tell me I had pneumonia. He had to tell me the truth. He didn't tell me I had an ingrown toenail. He told me I had pneumonia. I need antibiotics. This is the gospel. The gospel tells us the truth. You need redemption because you're a sinner. Israel needed out of Egypt because they were slaves. We need redemption because of our sin. The gospel always tells us the truth. The good news that Jesus died on the cross is useless if you don't have a sin problem. Your sin is your problem. And I don't care how far down you plumb the depths of your sin, his grace is bigger. But you will never see the extent of his grace if you refuse to acknowledge the extent of your sin. Why would God save us? He wants us to see our need.
Pastor Greg Spires, drawing assurance from a message highlighting Moses and the children of Israel from Exodus chapter 6, that the covenant-making God is a covenant-keeping God, a loving provider first to reveal our needs before meeting our needs. And this is Lasting Hope. And we'd like to invite you to listen each week at this same time for more encouragement from God's Word. And by the way, this and many of Pastor Greg's messages are also available for listening online at lastinghope.org. Greg Spires is the lead pastor of FBC in Medford, Oregon. Having grown up in the Rogue Valley, Greg's love of God's Word, the Bible, came alive when he attended Moody Bible Institute in Chicago. His desire with Lasting Hope is that people would become more interested in the Bible, because that's where we discover who God is. And if you'd like more information about Pastor Greg or the various ministries of FBC, just visit lastinghope.org. And while you're there, you can also sign up for Pastor Greg's weekly Lasting Hope newsletter. In it, Greg shares biblical wisdom, encouragement, and hope. Sign up when you go to lastinghope.org. And if you don't have a church home of your own, we invite you to join Greg for our online service Sunday mornings at 9:30 and 11 a.m. You can join us for worship and a message from Pastor Greg. Just go to lastinghope.org at 9:30 or 11 a.m. on Sunday and click on the link at the top of the website that says Watch Service Live. Again, go to lastinghope.org. Finally, Lasting Hope is committed to bringing people into a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And if you'd like to know more about what it means to know God, we have a special page on our website that will walk you through the steps to knowing God. Just go to lastinghope.org and click on the link, Knowing God. Again, that's lastinghope.org. Well, that's all the time we have for today, but please join us next time as we continue this message titled, Why Would God Save Us? That's next time on Lasting Hope with Pastor Greg Spires. Lasting Hope is the radio ministry of FBC in Medford, Oregon.